Welcome to another episode of the Fitted Furniture Makers podcast. This is a podcast where we talk to makers, woodworkers, usually fitted furniture makers, and we learn a bit about them and the work that they do and why they do it. Now, if you've been following this, you may have heard me suggest that I might be giving it a break. I'm not sure if I said it on a podcast yet or I just said it elsewhere. Things are busy at the moment for Freebirds, that's my company, and my name's Alistair Johnson, by the way. We are relocating to a much larger workshop, we're investing, we are learning a lot about lean manufacture and trying to set things up in that way. And I'm sharing that journey on my crowdfunding site, buymeacoffee.com/freebird. Some of you listening may follow me there. If you don't, check it out, no obligation, but you get quite a lot of free stuff for becoming a member there as well. Leaving that to one side, we've been doing this podcast series for a bit, getting to know a few woodworkers, and I couldn't help noticing in the last episode I was saying far more than usual, and it was bugging me, and that's one reason why I was thinking of just giving it a break. However, let me set the scene. Brady and myself, Brady works with me, we're sat in a room, an office that we're renovating, like a small, it's a charity not far from where we're based, and we're doing some fitting, some desktops, things like that. A lot of the work we've got to do is waiting on a delivery from DIYkitchens.com. And all they've said to us is it's going to come Friday or Saturday. We're here on Friday. It's probably coming Saturday now. And Brady and I, we've been chatting. We've run out of things we can do until those units arrive. We've been talking a bit about lean manufacturing principles, which we're both learning about, and talking a bit about how we're going to set up the new space and improve our working practices. And then I've said to Brady, well, what do you say we record a podcast, me and you, and I'll interview you? And he's typical Brady. He's always up for things. And he said, yeah, okay, we'll give it a try. So here we are. So Brady, hello.
Hello.
Now, I was going to bring up my standard questions. I said we'd do it in the normal format. Tell us a bit about yourself.
My name's Brady Orr. I'm 26 years old. I come from Sheffield. I've been working with Alistair now for 6 years.
Is it that long? I forget these things.
I think it's going on 6 years. Yeah, because I've been with Charlotte for 5 years this year. Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I remember when you got together. Yeah, that's another story. So,
long time.
Yeah.
Long time.
And well, the way I remember it, so I had an apprentice, my first apprentice, a guy called Mo, and he. Well, long story short, he had to leave. He was from Pakistan originally, and his dad's visa expired. He'd been with me a few years, three or four, I guess.
Yeah.
And the business was just me and Mo. That's all I knew. And I said to Mo, "Okay, looks like you're going to have to go. Do you know anybody?" And he said, "Oh, there's this lad Brady, and he seemed to like you and get along with you at the college."
Yeah, yeah, we were good friends.
Yeah, he said. Why don't you speak to Brady? So I knew the tutor at the time, Greg, and he said, "Oh, yeah, Brady's a good lad," and he said you hadn't been able to get a placement because you'd finished a few years, was it, of diploma?
Yeah, so I did diploma level 1, 2, and 3 site joinery, and it was just as I was finishing my diploma site joinery level 3, you got in contact with me.
Was it?
Yeah, just as I was about to finish. To be honest, I'd not really looked.
Okay.
I'd sort of just. I wanted to get out and wear as weird as it sounds and then move on.
So you're coming to the end of the course?
Yeah, I was coming to the end of the course. And I'd always said to myself that I'll get into it last year and then I'll start looking. First two, I'm just going to dedicate my time to learning. But that's sort of the wrong way around because I've learned so much more being on site than just sitting and doing in a college. Like you'll see in the latest video, I've never learned to join a worktop.
Yeah.
At college. I fitted a kitchen at college, but there were never a mason's miter involved. So little things like that. So went the wrong way about it. Should have looked for a finger, but thankfully I'm happy I didn't.
Good, I'm glad you're happy 6 years later.
I always wanted to be a site joiner, but actually after making cabinets and becoming somewhat of a cabinet maker, I'm so happy that I didn't go down that route.
Why is that then? You've told me this before, but go on and say.
there's a little bit more attention to detail. Like, you're actually creating something rather than going into an empty room,
mm-hmm.
laying skirting board, architrave, mm-hmm. hanging doors, the occasional roof. I think there's just a little bit more craft involved for me. Certain people, it might be the other way around, but I enjoy what I do more.
I certainly felt I got lucky finding you, and I think right from the start, I saw in you a very teachable attitude.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that you'd go far. I've always only go far. And I think I see Freebird as you are very fundamental to what Freebird is. And I feel if I say that and my wife listens, I should mention that she is as well. But we've got a really good core team now. You, my wife Alison, co-director, who's got a much better head for admin than I have, keeping things in order. Camilla, similar, vital part of the team, two days a week. Cool, level head, admin lady. But you are, you basically do the manufacturing.
Mm-hmm.
And I take the credit, I do the fitting, and I've established a lot of the procedures about how we do the manufacturing. But you increasingly have a say in that. And I think as we're taking this step to a new premises, I feel that we're both engaged with it. And I'm really glad about that. It's not just me saying we're going to do this. It's mm-hmm. you saying, I've just watched this video or listened to this podcast, and I think we should apply this lean manufacturing principle.
Well,
we'll maybe talk a bit more about that, but let's go through the standard questions, starting with, how would you make a shaker door?
So there's quite a lot of methods I use, ranging from the drop-in method, which is you just drop in with a rail saw, cut the middle piece out, and then route the back edge.
Which is the method described by John Jones in the first podcast we did.
Then the more traditional with just a five-piece method and a loose tenon, routing a groove, 6mm, 12mm, whatever thickness of panel you want to use. Which is my most... That's the favourite method.
Yeah.
It feels like you're creating a real door.
Yeah, it's like proper joinery.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is your favourite method to use the loose tenon or to do a stopped groove and use the domino?
Probably... I like the domino method, but for speed, the loose tenon is actually faster. And I only say that now because we've been doing domino joints in his doors for a long time, ever since we've had the domino joint.
Yeah.
But you've then got to stop. You've got to do a stop groove. Then you've got to cut your panel a little bit differently. Put a 45 on the corners so it where it meets. It's just a little bit longer. And then you've got to individually glue each piece. And once you've cut your door, it's all just set up. So you just lay your panel out, lay your rails and stiles, and you've got your loose tenons, and it's just a
you mean
faster.
When you do that continuous groove
run straight through the rail,
which we might call the Gary Banks method, I guess, except we use 22mm standard and he uses 25.
It's just faster. I mean, I've made a couple of doors this week that way, and I just noticed the difference. There's no set up for the stop groove. You just run the panel through the router and then that's it, it's done.
I'm interested because before you made that batch of doors, I think you were pushing to do it the domino method, and I got the impression your preference was to put the dominoes in, but you've done it and then you've realised the speed.
That's how we used to do it.
Yeah.
It just used to be all loose tenon before we had the domino jointer, but because I got set in my ways with the domino jointer, it was just the norm.
Yeah.
You need to break that pattern sometimes and just take a step back and look what's faster, what's the quicker method. You're achieving the same product, but how can you get there quicker?
And I wonder if the reason you like that again now is because we've both been learning so much about lean manufacture, which is to do with training your eyes to see waste, wasted time, wasted process.
Yeah, because
you like speed now.
Yeah, you've got to pick up an extra tool if you're using the domino jointer. And then you've got to do your domino joints, then you've got to route the groove, stop the groove, whereas you just set the router up, run it through.
Yeah.
Done.
Okay. And we've been talking about having a standard router set up for lots of processes. So I think you said to me, it's probably best we do 6mm grooves because you've got a 6mm cutter set up for drawbox spaces. And you can use the same router set up, maybe adjust the height. And we're looking now at doing an offset groove for our scribes. If you follow me on Instagram, you've seen a story based on Derek Barrett's method, where you have a backer strip with a groove in it, and then you biscuit joint the back edge of your scribe so that it just slots on to that support. We've been discussing about, because we've done it with a 5mm cutter for 5mm dominoes, and we've just been saying, well, if we just got a bunch of 6mm dominoes, then we could have still the same 6mm cutter for every grooving process. So, yeah. So, Brady, how would you go about making a chunky shelf?
The same method as we would use. Mm-hmm. Just cut your board to whatever width you want, whatever depth of shelf you want. Cut a lip, pocket all the lip to the top board. Add an 18mm spacer. All your thicknesses are 18 except the front lip, which it ends up at 54.
The height of it, but cut from 18mm board, isn't it?
Yeah, cut from 18mm board. And just basically create a sandwich.
So that's the method. Again, anyone following me will have seen me make... Well, again, I'm saying me. Brady's made them. You see me fit them. Brady makes them, Brady finishes them, sprays them. So, yeah, I was interested to ask you these questions because... occasionally, like when you did that video, that one video that you did on the YouTube channel so far, and you showed the Mitre Station, and you were saying a few things that you would do different, and people liked that. They're like, okay, you want to do things a bit different, maybe tell you're told. And I like that. I like you say you like you having ideas, but having made, I don't know, probably hundreds of chunky shelves now, you feel it's a good method.
I think from the video where you took a sledgehammer to the shelves, what you needed to refit. They're just solid, and even in the space we're in now, we've got some shelves fitted, and they're just solid. There's plenty of methods out there. I've seen many of people do it different ways, but it all just seems a little bit tedious.
The
other ways. I think our ways is a little bit quicker, especially once you set up. I mean, once I've got, if I'm gonna make five shelves, I could probably make five shelves and get them ready for painted in an hour.
Yeah, you're very quick with them. And I still wonder if we could speed it up even more.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah. There's ways.
Well, we were talking only today around lunchtime.
Yeah.
We pocket hole the top part of the shelf onto the lipping. So it's pre-attached. It's then sanded. It's sprayed as one. But you're always filling that joint because there's always a little gap.
Yeah.
And I was just telling you, it was Brian Needham, friend from Instagram and Facebook. He's over in America. We compare notes sometimes on... different methods. Hi Brian, if you're listening. He was telling me about a type of router cutter I'd never heard of before, which is like a straight cutter, but it's ever so slightly bulged, so ever so slightly convex. And you can run that along a cut edge. He uses it for plywood when he's putting a lipping on. And what he was saying is that it means when you apply the glue to that edge, there's always a bit of swelling of the wood fibres. And so that when you apply your lipping, whether you're clamping it or pocket holing it, the swelling of the centre of the cut edge tends to create a gap on the face. So you create that concave cut in the edge so that you can then pull the pieces tight, top edge is tight, and the swelling's allowed for. So I think perhaps we should give that a try. Yeah, I think you can always improve, can't you?
Yeah.
And it could be then that we glue and pocket hole and we've got a perfect joint, and then you cut out the filling step, which takes a bit of time.
Yeah, it does. And it's not only time, it's an extra cost.
Yeah.
Because you've got the cost of the filler.
True. Yeah, and then the cost of the time. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, well, I'm pleased that you like the methods that we use. What is your ideal project, Brady?
A modern alcove.
Okay.
Just base unit, chunky shelves. Mm. It's just the speed of it is just, there's no faffing about. You can knock them out pretty quick. When you want an upper unit on top, or it's a classic style, you've got moulding indoors and profiles to be routed in, skirting,
and
it just adds so much time.
Well, we were fitting what we call a classic unit the other day, and it was a 2-day job, almost more than that. It had lighting in it as well. And I was saying to you, that my heart sinks slightly when I come to fit a job, and I maybe for a brief moment forget if it's a classic or a modern, because you've prepared all the parts. It's ages since I saw the drawings, and it's like, oh no, it's classic. It's because the way we build them, we have one method. If it's a modern one, you build it that way. If it's classic, it's like you just got a bit more to do. You've got a skirting to add at the bottom, you've got cornice to add on top, and that skirting, that always seems to be the extra thing that makes it go beyond a day, if it might just have been a one day fit for a modern alcove. And then you said to me, didn't you, that you feel the same sometimes. It's like, oh, he's giving me a classic alcove, I've got more to do.
There's certain things I like about it. So I do like applying the moulding to the doors. That's one of my most favourite tasks to do in the workshop. I do enjoy it, but it just adds so much time to each process. Extra denibbing, extra sanding.
You do have an almost superhuman capacity to just denib for practically days on end. And I'm amazed at how little you complain. And sometimes you mention that your arm's aching. But yeah, sometimes we have a lot of white painted work going through and you're denibbing every coat. For those new to this, denibbing is the very fine sand after a coat of paint, which is one of probably the most important steps to get a very good paint finish. You have to keep flattening off after every coat. So you do have a very impressive capacity to consistently get a high level of finish and not cut your standards. And in fact, we've observed that it's usually you fretting over the tiniest speck or something on a door, and I'm going, really, it's fine. Our quality standards are so high. I think we see things that customers don't see. But I've often said I'm glad it's that way around. I'm glad it's me having to say, no, you're fine, than me having to pull you up on.
It's better things that way.
Yeah.
I'm always, there'll be, like Alistair says, slightest thing drops on and I'm like, oh, I've got to repaint it, but job's getting fitted tomorrow. And it's good to set the standard.
Yeah. So what do you most love about your work?
Just the freedom to create stuff in the space where I work in is probably the most exciting thing to me. Because Alistair's the first person who I've worked for. I've worked for family friends and stuff like that and done an odd job here and there. But Alistair's really good at giving me the freedom to just make the decisions in the workshop. And I don't always make the right decision. I'm not perfect. But it's each day I can come and I know that Alistair's not going to be in the workshop, which I would like him to be in the workshop more. But just being able to say, this is what I'm going to do today, and Alistair will come down and that's fine, that's cool.
So something I've realised recently is sometimes I'll say this phrase, and you've pulled me up on it, I didn't realise you didn't like me saying it. I'll say, oh yeah, the workshop's Brady's domain now. And I struggled with that, because the way the business went, Brady came on board, I realised I could trust him more and more, and my time just kept getting taken up with surveys, quotes, installation, general management. And for a long period, I'd be saying to Brady, I'm going to come down to the workshop and just help you finish this thing off. And he got to the point, I think, eventually of like, oh, he's probably not going to, he thinks he is, but he's probably not, because he always gets caught up with this or that in the office. And then I eventually came to the point of acceptance of maybe at this stage in the business, it's okay to just say, well, Brady does the making and I do the other stuff. But it's only recently, when you pulled me up on saying this, that I realised you'd really rather I was there more, because I think I've got in the habit of putting so much faith in you that I forget that you've still got a lot to learn.
It's questions. When I first started with Alistair, and even now, and anyone who's starting in this business, is just ask questions. Doesn't matter if you're interrupting your boss's time or the person you're working with. If they're not willing to stand and answer a question with you, then they're not the people you want to be working with. So at the start, there was just question after question. If I were a little unsure, I'd go and ask. And even now, if I'm still unsure, I'll go and ask. I'd rather ask and it be correct than be a bit scared to bother him because you're a little bit busy.
And I think another really good thing about you is you do judge that very well.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've had people who are too afraid to ask, And maybe I'm there explaining a process and I see the hidden panic in their face of, I'm not quite sure what he's talking about. And I just want them to ask me, because I wouldn't mind, but I'd rather they ask me than I just talk and talk and talk. Yeah. And then there's people that, there's not asking and not knowing. And then there's assuming you know and going on and doing something and making a huge cock up. I think it's partly over the years as we've got to know each other, I suppose. I've always felt that you've judged that quite well. Mm-hmm. So you're not shy to ask, but I think you've increasingly had the confidence to make the judgment call to just do something or fix something where you probably don't need my input. And I think that's quite essential. And it is to do with a level of mutual understanding and relationship where you can get to that point where, you know when to bother me and when not to bother me.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a big part of the way you are, like I was saying a minute ago, that you give me the freedom to do that as well, because if you're working for someone who just wants control of everything, and when I first started with you, you was a little bit like that.
I probably relaxed a bit on it, haven't I?
To be done a specific way, but I think gradually you've got to the point of where, as long as we come to the end product being the same as how you would want it, it's...
Yeah, and I say exactly that sometimes. I say it's more about achieving the result than having to do it my way. And I probably have changed on that. I probably did used to be more like it's got to be done this way. And that was definitely partly me, the perfectionism that I think a lot of us bring into this type of detailed work. I didn't know what the hell I was doing when I started this. I really didn't. I had no training. I hadn't worked with anybody else. I had a background in architecture. I mean, okay, I'd worked with another joiner, but not a fitted furniture maker. And that was a very strange relationship, really, where he wasn't very reliable. And I quite quickly found myself just picking up my own jobs. But what am I trying to say? Yeah, I was still figuring things out.
Yeah.
Certainly through the period of having Mo on board. And looking back, I mean, Mo was very patient, because I had my own sort of strange ways and things I insisted should be done that I've let go of now. But I think you sort of came on board as I was... I think we'd already standardised the Alcove methods fairly well, do you remember?
Yeah, you had the sheets.
Plans I make available to members... Sorry, that's another plug. I make available to members at Buy Me A Coffee... sort of like my blueprints of how we size all the parts for alcoves, whatever the alcove width. Yeah, so looking back, really, you came in at a time when the business had been quite shaped by two things, really. One was a book that I've mentioned before on these podcasts called The E-Myth, which is about systemizing a business, and it emphasizes anything that you do, you document it, you write it down so that you can tell someone else how to do it, and then the business can grow, because it's the owner's not the bottleneck. I think the other thing that shaped the business was Mo, because I didn't have any experience of employees. In fact, I had no particular ambition to take on an employee when I met Mo, and that happened naturally, as has every single staff member that's been through the business. It's I don't think I've ever advertised for someone. It's always been something that's just come about through my network. So Mo came on board, and Mo was a great worker, a good guy, and was skilled. However, I don't think he was a deep thinker about the work. So I would show him how to do something. He would do it. He would replicate it. But I started to realise that if that process had to be slightly changed, I assumed he had the understanding to change it correctly, but he struggled when he went beyond just doing it the way it had always been done. I'm not trying to speak badly of Mo, but we all have our different skills, and actually Mo was really good at just cracking on and getting certain things done. But what I think that meant was I shaped the business towards I need to dictate how every single step is done. And that was partly just the way I am, or was. That was partly what seemed to really be necessary for Mo. So then you came into that, and I think we've grown since then, where I've learned that I can give you more slack, because I've seen that you're thinking things through and coming up with ideas that contribute to the process. So something I wanted to cover, and I checked this with you before, and if it's all right to talk about it, and you said it was, mm-hmm. was your background was quite challenging for you, and I think you're really on the road of making a real success of your life, and I'm excited for your future, be it Freebird or not. Yep. I sometimes think we need to look beyond Freebird, but do you want to talk a little bit about your background?
Yeah, so I grew up without a dad because, unfortunately, he was involved with crime, and from crime he went to taking drugs, and from a young age, well, since I've been born, and he's never been there. I do have a man who I call dad. He's married to my mum. They've been married 18 years. He's been my father figure, but if anyone out there who's just sort of, let's say, being abandoned by their biological dad, it's the question is always, well, why did this man not want to be there for me? I do have a relationship with him now, somewhat. I occasionally ring him. But it was always me looking after the parent. Time after time, I'd try and help him stop drinking. I'd go to doctor's appointments with him. I'd be going to a pharmacy to get his tablets, all being at an age of 14, 15. When he come back into my life. So it wasn't an easy childhood, but it wasn't the hardest. Like I say, my stepdad met my mum when I was 8 or 9. And I don't know if it probably motivates me now to do better, especially now that I have a little boy, to do right by him, because my dad didn't want to do right by me. So
you said earlier you're having a sleepover with Ty tonight. I meant to ask you what you meant by that.
Yeah, so sort of every weekend he likes me to sleep in his room with him, so we'll get a pizza or a takeaway or whatever, and we'll just put TV on and just sit and watch TV or play Minecraft together. And he lights up, he'll ask me every week, can we have a sleepover? Nice. Can we have a sleepover? And he'll be counting the days. So on a Friday, it's something to look forward to go home and just know that I'm going to be having a night with my little boy.
That's nice. I think kids really respond to a routine. Mm-hmm. Like it's sort of like a tradition.
Yeah.
That's really nice. How old is he now?
He's 5. Yeah. He turns 6 in September. So
with what you went through with your dad, you didn't do great at school, did you? Right to say you're one of the naughty kids?
Yeah, I was not academic. I never engaged with school, and until I started doing design and technology, and I got to work with wood at school. Even though I'd been working with wood since I was like 5 or 6, I used to sit with hammers and bang blocks of wood together. My mum said, and at nursery she said they were this wooden race car, what you could take apart and build, and I were always playing with that. So I sort of always knew that I wanted to do something with wood, which is why I at school I just sort of like, well, I don't enjoy doing this. So and I'm not gonna use any of this except maths. I mean I struggle a bit with maths, but I get by with a calculator. It just, because nothing appealed to me at school, I didn't put the effort in, except when I went into design and technology, or I went to BTEC and I got to do woodwork. Working with my hands, I'm just better at working with my hands than sitting and writing or being on a computer.
I really think that intelligence is a very interesting thing. Mm-hmm. And people in the school context, the university context, there's this idea of intelligence as being academic, but you weren't academic, you didn't tick those boxes.
No. But
I see you as a very switched on guy who makes clear decisions, and I feel you know your own mind. That's something I've observed about you, and I think we work well together because I tend to overthink, partly because I am academic and I tend to think a bit more theoretical perhaps. you just get the job done. And I don't mean that in a bad way at all. No. A very good way. You focus,
yeah.
You crack on, you make that decision instead of wavering over it, you know, mm-hmm. maybe in consultation with me, yeah. You just get on with stuff.
There is times where I do wish I was a little bit more academic, where I'd have the foresight to think things through what I'm doing. But I'm just not wired that way. So I have to make it work. Yeah.
But I think what I'm trying to say is I completely see you as an intelligent person. It's just that intelligence, it's, you know, maybe you have a sort of street smartness I don't have, you have a sort of common sense that mm-hmm. sometimes I think I don't have, and you have a decisiveness. And I think what I'm trying to say is we all have these different strengths, don't we? Yeah. Different types of intelligence, different characteristics. And we when our team was a bit bigger, we did something called a DISC assessment, which is like a personality profiling thing. Which is, the purpose of it is to find out where people's strengths lie and to cater to those strengths in their role in a team. And I was more introvert, you were more extrovert.
Yeah.
I forget the other differences. There were certainly, we certainly had some contrasting characteristics. You actually were more D, which is the dominant characteristic, more the leader characteristic. Mm-hmm. And that's the sort of thing where, you know, I've had to, because there's part of me that thinks, well, I should be in charge, I should be D characteristic. Actually, one of the reasons this whole thing works is because I really don't like managing people, and I'd really rather you get on with it than I micromanage it. I've been much happier, I think, since knowing I can trust you with a lot and leave you to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that works for you, although you do also sometimes want a bit more input, and I think we're working that out.
Yeah.
So... But yeah, I do feel we make a good team, and I'm really excited about how we're moving forward into the new space.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
It's a big step. I mean, with the workshop what we work in now, I'm grateful for that I get to work there, but there's a lot of stuff what hinders us. We have a lot of leaks.
Yeah, we've just got a tarpaulin roof over the spray area, which was thrown up in a... not in a rush, but we didn't want to spend too much money on it, did it? We always thought it'd be fairly temporary.
So I do think once we're in the new space, it'll just be a blessing. We'll just be able to crack on. And
well, someone said to me in an Instagram message, someone that's been sort of following our growth with interest, but it was Sandy. I don't know if you're listening, Sandy. It struck me. You said to me something like, "Things can change dramatically, very surprisingly quickly." I think it's what he said. And I thought, I could see that happening. Mm-hmm. I could see this business really taking off. And I've got an optimism about it that I don't think I've had since the start. And I imagine maybe you see that. I like to think that I'm more confident now than I've been for a while.
Yeah, I think since I've worked for Alistair, there's been a lot of ups and downs.
Mm.
And sometimes I see myself as a little bit of like, I'm just that person in the background who's just chugging along, and if I keep chugging along, we'll eventually get there with Alistair leading the arrow. But it's a group effort. It really is.
And there's been times when I would have given up, actually, without you, in all honesty.
Mm.
And you know the main time. So Brady won Apprentice of the Year from Sheffield City Council, and that must have been 3 years ago or thereabouts.
Yeah.
And it was because of his work ethic and the work he was producing, but it was a large part because when my son was born, in very difficult circumstances, it was a very emotional time for me. We were fearing for his life. He was born at 28 weeks with brain damage. My head was a mess, and I didn't know how we could go on. I'd just taken on two more members of staff, and Brady just faithfully kept working, calmly, solidly, didn't demand too much of me. And I thought, okay, he can keep making, maybe we can keep doing this even when I can't think straight. At least he's still working. And it wasn't just Brady. We had other team members, and they all pulled together.
Yeah,
appreciated it all. But I've always seen Brady as very solid, and I always appreciated that. And I know sometimes you say that your friends say to you, why are you still working there? Because I think maybe I've been a bit slow to progress. And you've observed that in the past. I think when you first came on, you said, oh, shouldn't this business be going a bit further? But you seem to have just made your decision to stick around here. And sometimes I feel really concerned that I don't take that for granted or take advantage in any way. Because I think, I'll say to you, I think you should be paid more. And I look forward to the day when I feel I can pay you more. And I really think that's coming. But you've even said to me, haven't you, look, I can see you need to invest. I can see you're going to stretch financially. It's like you're telling me you're in it for the long haul because you seem to have a feeling it's going to go somewhere.
I do know people sort of. I've been offered jobs to come and work with friends where I could have earned £500 a week. But I would work in for big companies, but what I would rather work with a company where I'm not just a number. I'm someone, like, I can say I feel like we should do it this way, and Alistair's going to take that on board. We might start doing it that way, we might not, but we'll speak about it, we'll hash it out, and we'll come up with the best plan. And like Alistair said, I get a good enough wage. I don't need any more money at the minute, and I would rather the business be sustainable than Alistair give me what he thinks I deserve and a couple of weeks, couple of months.
I hope that what's behind that is a trust that when I feel it's really sustainable to pay you more. And by the way, this might be sooner than you think, but I won't say more. I've always assumed there's a trust there that you know that I'll do right by you.
Some people, like friends, have said that, how can you trust him? And being personally involved with Alistair and just being around him, I just know that if the money was there, Alistair would pay me more, and that's just it. There's no more to that. It's just, it'll come when the time's ready and when the business allows it to. And I'm happy. I work with great people. I've watched Alistair's kids grow up, and you know, it's a family, not a business really. It's just
Before lockdown, every time one of us opened the office door, which comes off our dining room, and then there's another door to the outside where Brady used to come in and get the keys for the workshop. Every time we opened that door, Isaac would go, "Hiya, Brady," even if you weren't there. It's kind of sad he's got out of that habit, because since the coronavirus, Brady's not been coming into the house. I suppose we're relaxing a little bit now, aren't we? It's just occurred to me we're possibly a little closer than 2 meters at the moment, but we've tried to take care, haven't we, and do things right as much as we can. What were we saying? The whole coronavirus thing, that was another time when you saw me questioning whether we would go on. And I was careful to prepare you for the possibility that I might have to just shut everything down, lay you off, because that was a very real possibility at first. Amazing to think how far we come, how we've turned around. From despairing to, I just really feel this is our time to grow. And it's almost like there's a blessing, I suppose, you use that word, a sort of like things come to you as you gain confidence and make a decision. This has been my experience. I've been so much happier and more confident since I finally made the decision. Because ever since running the business, there's been this thing hanging over me of, do I even want to grow this bigger with all the demands that it might place on me? And I think I never fully answered that question to myself. As long as the question was hanging there, I'd have this anxiety and doubt. But once we made that decision, we're going to, even in this crazy time, we're going to invest, we're going to take on a bigger space, we're going to grow. It's like, it almost feels like the floodgates have opened, because we have never had more inquiries than at this time. Things are happening at a pace, like this completely unexpected partnership with FINSA, where one of these podcasts we talked about, a board, everyone loves this board, and suddenly people are supplying it because we've had this
there's impact just from chatting about it. And then Finsa have acknowledged that, and now they've just confirmed today they're going to give us a load of boards, coloured melamine boards, MDF core, like really a lot, which is more than enough to kit out the workshop. And they're colour coded, which fits in with our lean manufacturing ideas that we're learning about, of visual cues and visual control. So yeah, you'll see more of that on my Instagram and YouTube in future. But yeah, it's just like, there's something like, when you make a decision and move forward, it's like, people talk about the universe comes behind you. And I mean, I'm a Christian, I believe in God, and I think that there's, the blessing is the word. Sometimes God sort of blesses, like God helps those who help themselves. That's the phrase people talk about. And so yeah, my experience has been, make the decision, move forward, and things start to happen. So let's see now, what other questions do I have? Well, one of the questions here is, what would be your ideal size and shape for your business? Now, of course, that's usually aimed at other business owners, but I'm quite interested to know your perspective on, because I think you're quite wise and insightful. I'd be interested to know what you think is the ideal size and shape from your point of view for this business. Yeah. But I know you often think in terms of, well, what you think is going to work for me and for the business in general. What do you think?
I think after watching a lot of lean manufacturing videos, is if you set the right process up, which we're heading towards, I think the business could be very small, and which is beneficial, obviously, less overheads, less employees to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's me and Alistair now, and Camilla and Alison, that maybe two more people, mm-hmm. and just suit us right, an extra fitter, maybe an extra pair of hands in workshop who could also be a production manager.
Yeah.
And do a lot of scheduling. I don't think we need to go big, like Neville Johnson or Sharps or anything like that. I think small is key. We all know how each other work. We bounce off each other. The relationships in the business is what I believe makes a good business.
Yeah.
That if you all can get along, and you're all good at working with each other, you play to each other's strengths. I would say that's the key to a big business, to any business, not
and
just
that's
a big business.
Inevitably going to get diluted or disappear the bigger you get, because you can't have that much contact with people. The guy at the top's juggling too many things.
And I think that's with everything. Alistair's, we've spoken about with the games table maybe being a mass production that, people tend to not care then. If I'm going to build a table, then I'm going to make sure everything's right. Where if you've just got someone on a factory floor, he's just another number.
Yeah, for those that don't know, this has been a project that those who do follow me a lot have probably seen it and seen it mentioned. It's a multifunction table. Something I put a lot of effort into the design. I'm still refining. So you can play board games on it, you can cover it over and use it as a dining table, you can slot cup holders and other things into the side of it. This has been on the horizon for a while and is a big part of the plans for the new space, with a CNC machine, more space, a bigger spray booth. We think we can start moving this into production. But yeah, that's interesting, Brady. So you're saying you think that if we really moved it to like one standard model and mass production, you're saying that doesn't excite you, and you don't think it'll excite customers in the same way?
No. I think being able to, so any customer of ours gets to liaise with Alistair, the business owner, and speaks to as receptionist, well as admin, Camilla and Alison. I think it's more of a family feel than just a, I'm a salesman and I want to sell you this product, and it's just going to get fitted, and no one cares. What they care about is getting the wage slip at the end of the month.
I see. Once it's set up that way, you're just a button pusher or a machine operator, the standardised process.
Whereas I come to work and I'm I'm a part of the business. I get to make decisions. I've overseen some employees and apprentices who we've had and sort of took the role of their leader and their boss or what somewhat. It's about caring.
Yeah.
The end product is as good as what we can make it because we all care in the business.
That reminds me of a chat I had with the coach that we've now got on board. So Bruce Polling, the joinery coach, we are now paying him to advise us. And I think you've connected with him, Brady. I think you like having him on board. So Brady's part of that now. We do video calls very early in the morning because of the time distance. Bruce is based in Australia. And we're always running things by him about how we're going to set the new workshop up and get his expertise. And I talked to him one time about team and about value statements. So I like to think we're a values driven business, and we've got a sort of a value statement, and it's to do with improving quality of life for all involved. That's how we summed it up. So it's not just about money, but it's partly about money. Yeah, we want to make profit. We want to pay people well because that's part of it. But all the things you're hearing Brady talk about, the satisfaction of his work, it's very clear that that's important to Brady. So I talked to Bruce about this, and he was actually saying that he doesn't think value statements motivate people. And I was questioning him on that. But the answer he gave, which is really good, was he said, if you, for example, tell somebody to watch a machine and make sure that it's still functioning correctly, like for 8 hours a day, and you tell them the values of the business are attention to detail, patience, integrity, you know, things that you might think would motivate them to do this thing, but they're not really going to stay motivated for long. They might watch that machine for the first day, and then their mind wanders and their motivation reduces. If you give them a why, this is the difference. If you say to them, that machine is keeping a child alive in the next room, then you don't need to give them a load of, like, your business mission statement or your value statement. Yeah. They understand why. And that really impacted me, and I want us to have a business where we're doing it for a reason, and we're pulling together. And in some ways, maybe we still have to define that reason better. But I think at least for now, we all know we're doing it for any given customer that's coming through. We're trying to give them the best result, aren't we? The best experience. And I think that's what motivates us. And there are values underlying it. But yeah, it was interesting, I think, to see we don't have to beat my staff over the head with this long list of values I expect them to stick to. Because the other thing Bruce said was sometimes people come into work one day and they've had a bad weekend and they just don't feel like, I don't know, displaying integrity or displaying this or that. Yeah, so you get the idea. But I did want to just touch a little bit more, and we'll wrap this up soon because we should both get off to our homes, a little bit more on your background and how you overcame it. I think what you said was really good. And I know there's people listening to this that will relate to it. What's impressed me as I learned more about your background after you came on board was you said something to me early on, like you used that difficult experience and that disappointment and anger that you felt at your dad to make you a better person.
Yeah.
And I find that commendable and unusual, because the classic thing is, in that situation, that people get bitter and angry and rail against society, and you know, everything goes downhill, and they end up following that path that their dad went down. Yeah. And you seem to have been able to go a different path. And what do you think is the key to that for you?
Well, I think my mum and my stepdad were a big part of that. They put up with a lot. I had, growing up, I was an extremely angry kid. I'd lash out at anything, really. I were in a mood and I'd punch a wall, not proud of it, and you know, I'd just lose it, and never could really deal with my short temper or the anger what I had inside. But growing up, I realised that it was towards this person, my what you would call your dad.
You seem uncomfortable calling him your dad. When you say your dad, you talk more about your stepdad.
Yeah, and I never call him dad, even if I'm talking. Occasionally, if I'm talking to him, I'll say, "Oh yeah, bye, I love you." But it's, how could you love someone who were never in your life, never cared for you? And I've been told this. He actually didn't want my mum to proceed with giving birth to me.
Yeah.
But I say I love you and stuff like that, it's more for my nan's sake. I have a really good relationship with my nan, my biological dad's mum.
Yeah.
And it's more for her sake, because if it wasn't for her and for me, he would have no one.
Mm.
None of his brothers talk to him, none of my cousins. So I try to make her a little bit happy, but yeah, it's hard just to say, oh yeah, he's my dad, and it's confusing to people, because some people be like, well, what do you mean by your dad? And when I'm saying dad, I do mean my stepdad. He's my dad. He has adopted me. He has all parental rights over me. So he is my dad. He was the person who stepped in and was willing to, he wanted to marry my mom, and he took me as well. I think it's a very strange word. Some people say that, oh yeah, he's your dad because he's your blood, but he's not. To me, your dad is whoever, it doesn't matter who he is. It could be a stranger, as long as he's there for you.
Yeah.
Whenever you would need that father figure, he's your dad, isn't it?
That takes more commitment than just making a baby, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's
more, that takes more manliness.
And I do that now with, when I say I had a child earlier in the podcast, he's actually my stepson. I do see him as my little boy. It's his dad. Sees him more and more now, but never really fully committed to being a dad to him. So I know how he would feel. So
yeah.
I wanted to sort of be there for him, and he's only five, you know, and sometimes he'll trip up and he'll call me dad, and but I would never expect him to call me dad. I'm happy with being called Brady. I'm just always going to be there as a father figure to him, no matter what. Even if me and my partner were to split up, I would still be there for my little boy, because he is my little boy. I've known him since he was 6 months old.
So
I've known it. I've spent more time with him than his actual dad has, and I'm not trying to put his dad down, but you know, some people just aren't ready for it at that specific time, because his dad.
That's a fair way of putting it, I guess.
Well, his dad does have a child now, and my little boy has a brother, so. But he spends more time with his other child, and he's. Living in an actual family now, and that will be a big thing for Ty when he's a little bit older, is that why is my biological dad living with my brother and never really bothered with me? You know, it's going to be a challenge when he's older, but
well, he's lucky to have you.
I'm lucky to have him.
when you started working here, and you know, I was seeing a lot of potential in you, and we're sometimes singing your praises. I think you'd sometimes point out that you weren't always the same person outside of work, and it seemed like getting this opportunity and working in my business, being given a certain amount of responsibility, I got the impression what you were saying was you could leave that anger behind, and you could be a slightly different Brady.
I tried to. So when Alistair said earlier that some people will come in and they've had a bad weekend, whether I've had a bad weekend, a good weekend, I try to come into the business as, right, I'm professional Brady now. I've come to work. I try not to be angry. I try not to be the person outside of the work, because sometimes I do still lose my temper and stuff like that, and you know, it's I don't punch things no more, but
it's occasionally happened with me as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, there's times
a little bit the other way as well, which is only good, I think. Occasionally we've really clashed about something.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, it blows over pretty quick and we deal with it.
Yeah. Well, you have to, don't you? I think once you sort of, there's always going to be tension what built up between two people and
yeah, there's been times, hasn't there, where something's been, I mean, there's been the odd time when I've spoken a little bit too freely on a podcast or YouTube, and again, to your credit, you've pulled me up on it, and that's one of the good things, is that you will address something head on rather than let it fester.
Yeah, because if I would let it fester, it'd come out and I would do something what would probably make me lose my job or and I don't mean that in a bad way, but it's just once I do lose my temper, I lose my temper, and it doesn't matter. I see red, basically. I'm just like, I don't care what happens. And then after, I'm like, what have I done? Damage is done. Can't do all about it. You've just got to deal with it then.
So was it like a conscious decision? Because you knew that about yourself when you came to work. You just thought, well, I'm going to leave that side of me.
Yeah, you just switch it off and just...
Yeah.
And I think that's because I love what I do.
Yeah.
I always knew I wanted to do woodwork or work with wood. And because because it's my passion to be a woodworker, I just come to work and I switch off. I'm just like, right, it's not really work. Yeah, I have deadlines and stuff, and I have to get things done. But even on the bad days, they're a good day because I'm getting to do what I enjoy.
I really think there's something special about working with your hands and creating something.
Yeah.
I'm kind of academic by background, but right throughout my life, I've always been most happy making things. So you said you were messing around with a hammer as a kid. I was the same. Yeah. I was always building dens in the garden, knocking bits of wood together. And so the reason I hesitated was I was just about to say my dad was really good. He would let me, but it sounds like your mum and your stepdad were the same. My dad just seemed to be willing to let me take risks, and I try to take that approach with certainly with Abby, and to the extent that Isaac can, I would as well. I just want them to learn and feel sort of empowered to experiment.
Yeah.
And I think I was learning to do that. But yeah, so what we're saying was that I do think that there's something very good for your state of mind to make something in the day. And I know I'm always happier after a day making in the workshop or fitting compared to a day in the office without fail. I just feel like the day's been more productive.
We're not meant to be in workshops. I mean, we're not meant to be in offices. We're meant to be out building somewhere with his hands and stuff like that. And even if it's just digging an hole, digging an hole. That's just how I think we should all be. Just work with his hands.
Yeah, good honest work.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good, Brady. I think we'll leave it there.
Yep.
Get off to our families. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
And everybody that's listening, always welcome your feedback. I thought this would be a bit of a change, this one. I thought there might be people out there who'd be just quite interested to hear Brady's voice, who've seen him in the background of photos and videos before. So what I usually do is I publicise this podcast on an Instagram post, and so I'll put the link to that post below. And if you've got any sort of feedback or thoughts on this, go to that post and make a comment there. Well, thanks for listening. I'm not going to make any promises about future podcasts. I am considering calling this the end of the series. However, knowing me, I sometimes just find something or someone that inspires me and I just do something off the cuff, which is what happened today. This wasn't planned. So you never know, but it may be that there's a bit of a break before the next one comes out. If you still want to see what Freebird are doing, then check Instagram, check YouTube, or go over to buymeacoffee.com/freebird. And that's where I'm posting the regular vlogs about how we're setting up this new workshop, including all these lean manufacturing ideas that we've touched on. We'll be sharing a lot more about that there. So have a look, see what you think. Drop me a message anytime. And I wish you the best with all your woodworking endeavours. Bye for now.